Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is October the 23rd, 2014. And today we're going to be talking about working with teams for team building and all kinds of topics related to teams for in sports. And, of course, these also, the principles also relate to working with teams building and working with teams on the corporate level, too, if some of you are working in business and corporations, too. So we want to talk about topics like team goal setting and how to create a team culture and team motivation techniques, and communication is really key, of course, helping your players to focus and to be able to communicate their feelings and thoughts, and you know, some insights on effective leadership, and we can talk about knowing your players' leadership styles and leadership exercises. And then with motivation, we can discuss strategies to improve team and player motivation, and then motivation exercises, understanding your players' motivations, and, you know, talk about team cohesion and how to get the team to focus, concentration, and handling the emotions that go on and a lot of the politics that go on with teams, and then visualization. And I know, Greg, you sent in a lot of great questions, so I can talk about those, you know, how to build rapport quickly with team members and how to help coaches handle, say, overly talented athletes that might not be good players or might not be adhering to team values, and then helping coaches to choose the best team captains or leaders. Sometimes they're based on just one factor instead of many factors. And then dealing with the problem of sort of overthinking with your athletes, and then and how to make your best presentation to a team. And, yeah, you had lots of great questions. Thanks for sending those in, Greg.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And so I know, and Alex, do you have experience working with teams as well?
Somewhat. I did some coaching with a baseball team, but then I focus on one or two players. A couple of meetings with a team, which was very dysfunctional, to say the least. So this has become very, very helpful.
Hi, John, just entered.
Oh, hi, John. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. How's everybody?
Good. Yeah, we've got Alex.
I'm a little late.
Alex, and then we've got Greg. So great. We've got the whole country spectrum represented here. John's in the middle in Nebraska, right? Alex on the East Coast and Greg on the West Coast.
no females today so far.
Except, yeah, just me so far. I'll represent the female portion, I guess. So hopefully Michelle can join us from Canada here. And we have a couple of new people that might join us from Mexico, too. So, so this is great. And I guess, Greg, you've worked with a lot of teams. Is it mainly soccer or various sports?
Cool. All right. Yeah, soccer is probably primary. I actually worked with a collegiate basketball team 2 weeks ago, baseball team, tennis team next spring. I have a tennis team that I'm going to work with. So it's building.
What building?
The different teams, the variety.
Oh, yeah, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Maybe I'll start with a story that where I was working with a team. Well, let me just kind of give you an introduction first, that I know a coach is, you know, we need to be trained to be successful working with teams and with individuals. And the coaches of those teams need to be trained to be successful leaders to get the, you know, the most out of their teams. Oh, by the way, just checking, can you hear me okay? Is the volume okay?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
good.
If it goes down or something, let me know. Just make sure I hold my microphone close enough to my mouth here. Yeah, and you know, when a team is filled with good talent, you need to, you know, they need to make sure that the coaches need to make sure they keep the team focused and playing up to their abilities, even when, as you said in one of your questions, Greg, that sometimes the team is, doing really well and they can get complacent, and that can be an issue sometimes because there's a lot of a team culture that goes on. Sometimes, on the other hand, when coaches coach teams with average or below average talent, the challenge is to lead the team so that they believe in themselves and can play overachieve, do even more than they expected. Hi, did someone else just join us?
Yes, and this is Fernando from Mexico.
Oh, hi, Fernando. Yeah, Fernando's from Mexico City, right? And
Hi.
Did someone else just join us?
No, I think Annie's just there.
Oh, okay. Is Annie there too?
Well,
okay.
Not with me. She's going to call you by
herself.
Okay,
great. Yeah, we've got two new people from Mexico City, Fernando and Annie. So welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great to have you on our call. So we're just talking about teams here and how a coach leads. I'm just giving a little introduction here about how you help the coach to lead their team is really important in all these different situations. And I think, getting the team to sort of buy into the coach's philosophy of how they should play is really important. So here's some of the things, some tips sports psychology tips that I've used that can really help. I think one is, to generate that enthusiasm and excitement is really important. I think it's no secret when we're excited and or when we're not excited, and that generates, you can really project that. And then I think your team players are more apt to be motivated to play hard and win, when they have that excitement there or something to strive for. And I think coaches who show enthusiasm, they're almost always, it will benefit by the team picking up on that kind of energy that the coach exudes as well. Or sometimes it could be a team player, a team leader that generates that enthusiasm. And as a result, the team usually plays with, better focus and motivation and mental toughness and resiliency when they're not doing as well. So excitement is really an important factor. And then secondly, goals, setting realistic goals is really key. And there's been, in my experience, I know when people set realistic and challenging goals rather than goals that are, way too easy or way too difficult, just setting something that's just beyond their comfort zone, then both individually, within the players and then the team goals too, then people are more likely to persevere and remain motivated toward their goals, even in tough situations. So setting a goal that challenges your players, and then with every accomplished goal, you try to set another tier of goals that are even more challenging than the first set, that's just a little bit beyond that. So, I think it's really important to have both individual goals because each individual on the team needs to feel like they're contributing and that they're giving their best effort for the team. And then they have team goals, too, obviously to play their best against their opponents. Sometimes, individuals can give their absolute best effort individually, but still the team loses, and it's really important to have those individual goals of the team players, in place so that they know that, afterward you can debrief and say, even if our team lost, you gave your best effort, and here, go through each team player and see what they did well, so that they feel like they are contributing and that they are moving forward. And then another principle to follow with teams is to be fair and consistent. When you're working with them with sports psychology or with the coach, I think coaches that treat all players as fairly as possible, they're going to get the best team cohesion rather than, giving all the attention to the star on the team. So while it's important to motivate players as individuals, when it comes to, team rules and and guidelines, it's important to be as fair as possible in order to, you know, improve that team chemistry so everybody feels like they're getting the attention that they need, and they feel like they're getting treated fairly. And then it's really important, something that I think when you're working with coaches or teams, that's really key, that it doesn't get done often enough, is giving that positive feedback. You see coaches so many times, you know, just really, you know, out there, they're just so negative and just being really tough on players, thinking that that's going to make them better. And I think that you need a mix of both feedback, but also really positive rewards too, to keep people motivated. And that's one of the primary things when I'm working with teams, the individual players complain about, is that they're not getting enough positive feedback, or they just, you know, the coach will see, they'll do 100 things right and one thing wrong, and the coach, you know, just highlights that one thing that they're doing wrong. And so if you can help coaches to give that positive feedback, you know, make them realize that people are much more likely to reach their goals when they're praised and they're shaped in positive and constructive ways, rather than embarrass or humiliate players into performing better. You know, you want to find creative ways to praise for their effort level. Even if they're not, let's say, getting as many points as you'd like, you can always praise for effort and praise for attitude. So encourage those players to do a better job for the next time around. And then one other principle is to just be ready, that we can really help with as performing edge coaches is in sports psychology, is to help teams to be ready to deal with losses. So while it might, athletes don't want to think about the tough times or what might happen if something goes wrong, but it's really important to do that. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because most teams are going to lose, and some lose a lot. And so preparing for those dejected players, the dejected players and a negative locker room kind of thing is really important. So, it's like that saying, it's not how many times you get knocked down, but how many times you get up. And coaches, I think, need to think about how to regain the team and move them quickly through that sadness and sulking stage and, you know, really rebound and get back to the focus and motivation they need to play at a high level, you know, the next day, or sometimes it's at halftime. Even if you could be in a position to talk to a team, or to help the coach talk with a team during a quarter or a halftime when things aren't going so well. Sometimes those talks can really make a difference. Can help the team to bounce back. So those are just some general principles here. And did some other new people join us? I heard a couple of dings.
Hi, Joanna. It's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Good to hear your voice. That's
great. I
haven't
talked to you for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back here. That's great. Yeah.
This is
Monica's
here.
Oh, and that's Monica?
Yes. How are you?
Okay, good. Yeah, good to hear your voice, too. From, let's see, remind me where you're calling from?
Costa Rica.
Yeah, from Costa Rica, yeah. So we've got people all over the place, Mexico City, Costa Rica, and the U.S. So that's great. So, is anyone else new that just joined us?
Dave
hey,
McIntyre.
John, this is Annie from Mexico.
Okay, Annie, from Mexico all City.
Right.
Hi, Annie. Yeah, I've got a really good full call today. And who else just joined us?
Dave McIntyre.
Oh, hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Yeah, you just got back from that conference, too.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Alex. Good to hear from your voice.
Likewise.
Yeah, that's great. So, one thing I wanted to do is just first give you a story of a team that I worked with and how powerful our work can be. I got a call a while back from a professional football team in here in California, and I got the call from the sports medicine doctor who works with the team, and that's a good place that you might get referrals sometimes to be to work with teams is talk to orthopedic surgeons who work as a sports medicine doctor for various professional teams or amateur teams, and the sports medicine doctor, the orthopedic surgeon, had actually been my client earlier and asked me to work with him individually on his peak performance in the operating room, which was kind of interesting work. You know, working with surgeons, that's another area that you could work with. And he called and said there was an emergency that this professional football team, they just lost one of their players. They just found him dead in his room, hotel room, and one of the key players, and they had a really important game coming up in a couple of days, and the whole team was just devastated. And he said, you know, can you come down here this morning and work with the team to, you know, a sort of crisis intervention and counseling and psychology and help them to get through this? Because they canceled practice this morning and everyone's just so upset. And so I canceled several things I had and said, okay, I'll come down. And I, you know, at that point when someone's really, you know, needs something and it's a professional team, you can kind of name your price and charge whatever you'd like for something like that because it's they're willing to pay you well for your services too. They have the budget to do that. So I did that and I went down there that morning and all of these, I met with like 25 players, these huge guys, you know, 300-pounders guys and along with the quarterback and all the players were sitting in a circle in this hotel room and they were just sobbing and crying. You normally see football players don't cry and or you don't see that normally. You don't see them sharing their emotions, but these guys were all just really upset because this player was meant so much to them, and it was a really close team. They just worked really closely together, and so and it was such a shock to them, and they weren't sure what the cause of death was at that time. So I went down there, and it was just an emergency kind of thing. I hadn't prepared any kind of presentation, or at that point, it's not appropriate to really give a presentation. I brought a box of my books, and I thought first I'd just start by giving them my book. If you have a handout or any kind of sort of tips on grieving, you know, you could give them that. I just happened to have my books here, so I gave them each a copy of my book to, kind of show them who I am and my work, and they could get some helpful training from there. And it was just a nice gesture as a gift to them. And then I just went around the room and I just said, I'm not here to talk to you. I'm here to talk with you about this, what's just happened. And if you can, we'll call him Johnny, the guy that died. We'll just give him that name for now. I said that I know Johnny meant a lot to you. And if you can, let's just go around and talk about, what this player meant to you and how you are feeling right now and how we can get through this as a team. And so each of the players, we didn't go, exactly around the room, but just kind of picked out certain leaders or people that were able to express their feelings. And I said, well, just first tell me what happened. Who was first on the scene? And a couple of players said that they went into his room and just found him dead there in the room. And this player, and we're just, just totally devastated. And so they just talked about that and what they found, and then we just went from there. And each player kind of opened up a little bit more, then that gave room for other players to open up too. And they actually just talked about their feelings, and it kind of, as each person opened up more, that gave permission to other players to express their feelings and to be able to cry and do what's the normal human emotion in that kind of situation. and they weren't thinking about the next game or being aggressive or being, you know, anything at all. They were just right in the moment thinking about their feelings and what they were being able to process that. So if you could, in that kind of situation, it was one of the most gratifying things I've ever done as a sports psychologist, was just be in the moment and be able to be with these players and help them to process through their feelings for this loss right there. And they, you know, we had about an hour and a half session, and they just felt like at the end they're Christian, so they got together in a circle and they prayed, and they included me in the circle and did a little prayer too. You know, if the players initiated that, so it just depends on how you feel about that. Each of you may have a different religion. I'm not advocating that per se, but for them that was important, and so they all just got together, and it was it just brought everyone together, and they invited me into the circle too, so it helped me to feel part of that team. And they, you know, afterward they all came up and hugged me and hugged each other, and they felt like they told the sports medicine doctor afterward, when I talked to him, that they just felt like it was so great to be able to process their feelings there, and that it was a you know, with this major loss, and that it was it was like a big weight had been lifted off their shoulders. And so they were able to, you know, just kind of spend time. I gave them some tools, too, to just kind of journal about their feelings and what this player meant to them, and how they can still pull together as a team, and how, you know, just how much to appreciate every day, how to be grateful for each day, because life is fragile sometimes. And how to support each other through this and really be a team. So they took a day or two off, and then they were able to play that weekend and play a good game and recover. I mean, of course, it takes a long time to recover from a major loss, but they were able to deal with their feelings enough so that they could perform well on the next game there, even with this loss of a player. So that was one situation, kind of an unusual one, but it's an example of how you could work with a team to process their feelings. I mean, the same kind of thing could happen if a team has lost a major game or something major, you know, one player has gotten injured or something. You get together and you know, let the players process it. But because it was important that I, in that situation, that I was just a facilitator. I wasn't a, you know, presentation leader. I didn't go in with saying, well, here's what you do when you're, you know, in grief, you know, step number 1, 2, 3. I think they would not, that wouldn't have gone over well. They just needed to talk at that point and to process feelings. This is the same, even though your situations may be different in other situations like that, I think that's a really good technique to use. Sometimes you can just be a facilitator and allow the team to talk to each other. You could use that same technique if there's a, you know, team that's up where there's a lot of people who are upset about something, or the team isn't gelling well together. You know, just to be able to allow people, rather than just coming down hard on the team like coaches, athletic coaches do sometimes. You want to be a facilitator and just allow them to talk to each other in an open environment like that, and acknowledge each person's feelings and make them feel important, make each person feel important, not just the star of the team. You know, so that's an example of a team situation where it was really good, where a team, you know, sports psychology in action sort of thing, being able to allow a team to recover quickly from a devastating situation right in the middle of a football season. So, let me just ask, I know, Greg, you've got lots of experience, and we can kind of go around with all of you and, you know, talk about your experiences with teams or the questions that you have. Yeah, Greg, did you have you want to ask maybe some of your questions that you had emailed me? I don't know if Greg's there.
Yeah, I'm here. I just, you know, where do you start? I guess starting at the beginning might be best. In my opinion, when I work with teams, it's really a one-and-done type situation.
A one-and-what?
One-and-done.
One and done, yeah.
I would like to believe anyway that it's a process. You know, it's to go in and, unlike what your situation, that of course is a one-time event, but what I try to do is build relationships with the coaches specifically, because to your point, working with the team requires going through the leader, which of course is the coach. So my process is to first, in my opinion anyway, the foundation of any great team or good team is trust. So I take the team as well as the coaching staff through a process on how to build trust within the coaching staff and then specifically with the team. And that trust is developed through communication. So I use a process called the DISC behavioral style assessment,
right,
so that we can understand, yeah, how each other communicates and work with the team in that regard. So, because once you can establish open communication and you can give unfiltered feedback, you know, with ideas for improvement and so on and so forth, that allows you to start creating commitment to purpose, goals, and objectives, if you would want to call them objectives, so that you can also set roles and responsibilities around those commitments once you have the communication piece in place. And then from there, you can start holding each other accountable for the goals and objectives you've set. And now all of a sudden, you have a performance-focused team rather than one that is just a bunch of individuals trying to accomplish their own goals. So that's the process that I use, and then it just builds from there. That's usually meeting number one, and then I'll get invited back almost every time. And from there I have actually, through your help, Dr. Joanne, developed a visualization piece, a presentation that I use to help them get past some of those issues that we've talked about as individuals. And it just kind of grows and develops from there. It becomes a relationship, I guess, is my point. So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it is. I think it's the trust is the key thing at the beginning. And to if you can establish yourself, I'm sure you do, Greg, and all the others as the expert on this topic, and you know, really being aware of what's going on in the team, and try to make yourself part of them. I know that one of the questions you asked was how do you develop rapport quickly? That was a really good question too, Greg. And I think when you're coming into a new team or a new group, how do you develop that rapport? I think if you can talk first of all, before you do a presentation or come in, if you can, you know, talk with each of the individual leaders beforehand and do a kind of pre-programmed questionnaire, ask them, you know, what are your five major stresses? What are your biggest challenges, you know, in your sport, within the team here and within the sport? What are your goals? What are your major accomplishments? What is it that you want to achieve? What are the roadblocks that are getting in your way? And what's the structure right now of the team, and who are the leaders within the coaches, of course, and then leaders on the team? Work with, if you can find out those things ahead of time, find out the lingo, kind of learn, there's the lingo within that particular sport, and then there's the, you know, sort of the lingo in the language of that particular team. They may have specific words or in jokes that they use, you know, if you can understand those, that's a really good, can help you be an insider first, so that you know more about the team and, you maybe know a particular story, if you can get a story or two about what's happened recently with the team or with particular players. And if you know their stories, then then all of a sudden you're part of them. You're not just an outsider. And so that can help you really build rapport quickly, I think, to talk with each of the individuals first and then talk with the group together. So, that's a really good technique there. I know also you asked when presenting to a team, what are some of the great sort of icebreakers, right, to talk with your, to start your presentation with?
Yes.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, because you give talks for lots of different groups. Sometimes you might just come in and give a one-time talk, and then other times you might work with them over time. So if you could some of the icebreakers I think to start with are, well, to tell a story first of all. If you can tell a story of how you worked with it that shows your expertise, how you worked with a team. With these kind of sports psychology techniques and got really good results, that can really help to establish you as the authority, the expert in the area, and get them motivated for what you can do for their team. And you can also just kind of go around and ask people what attracted you to this sport. What got you into the sport initially, or what attracted you to this team. So you get a lot of the positive input that way. That can be a good icebreaker. Or what do you like about this team? Ask each person, what do you want to achieve individually in your sport as an individual and then as a team? So kind of get there, because each athlete wants to be feel like they're important as an individual and that they're contributing to the team. And then you could have them do like an exercise, like talk about the three P's of your performing edge, the positive images and power words and present focus, and do an exercise for each one of those. Like with the power words, you could have each person take a piece of paper and draw a vertical line down the center, and then put the negative thoughts on the left-hand side, self-doubts about themselves individually, or maybe doubts about the team as well. Is our team, even if I perform well, is our team going to do well? They might have doubts about that. And then teach them about what I call the power words, putting those positive statements on the right-hand side, and be able to say, maybe put three positive statements or power words on the right-hand side for each of the negative thoughts, so you build that kind of repertoire of positive thinking there, and you have all kinds of positive self-statements, like if they might think on the left-hand side, they might have the doubt of, are we going to be able to, I don't know if we can beat this team coming up that we're going to be playing, and we usually mess up when the pressure's on. And then go to the right-hand side of the page and have them write down some things some ways to counteract that, saying, okay, well, what are our strengths here? Okay, write down, say, three strengths. Well, we have, let's say for volleyball, we've got great setters, we've got great hitters, we've got great libero, a great defensive team. And we're working together. We can strive to beat this other team. Those kind of things you could write on the right-hand side. Or you could have kind of like a little game. You could make it, divide the room of players when you're given a presentation. Divide the left side to, say, be the negative folks, and the right side be the positive folks. So you can make it kind of fun. And so the left side says, throw out a negative thought or self-doubt that you might have and have somebody say something, and then turn to the right side of the room and say, okay, so what could he say differently, he or she? How could you counteract that thought? What do you want to say? And so you can sort of have the negatives versus the positives. So that can be kind of fun as an icebreaker, that sort of thing. Yeah. Any other people have other techniques you'd like to share? I know we've got a really good group here today. And also, first, I just wanted to introduce our new people, Annie and Fernando, if you're there from Mexico City. Since you're new, do you want to introduce yourself and say what you're doing with groups, working with equestrians, right, in Mexico City? Are you there?
Yes, well, Annie, you go first. Ladies first.
What's that? Say that again?
She's putting me first, Joanne.
Oh, okay, Annie, go ahead.
Okay. Well, we work with corporate groups mainly, and we are starting to work with athletes and specialized in with equestrians. Now we are leading the team for the dressage team for the Central American Games.
Yeah, congratulations on that. You're actually the sports psychology coaches, right, for the Central American Games coming up?
Yes, that's right. So we are very happy, and we are very happy also to have your help.
Yeah, that's such an honor.
And
I mean, an honor for you
yes,
to work with
us.
That Central American team. Fantastic. It's like the beginning of the next stage to the Olympics, right?
Yes, for the Pan Am Games and then the Olympics. And we've been using other techniques like equine-assisted coaching, and especially with corporate teams. And, well, we are happy to be, very happy to be here and eager to work with you and learn from you.
Okay, well, thank you, Annie. Yeah, and Fernando, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Well, my name is Fernando. I'm from Mexico City. I'm working with Annie. We are partners. We have been working with coaching for at least eight or nine years, at least. Basically, we work with different techniques assisted with horses, and this technique has been very successful for most of our coaches. So we are looking for learning more about particular on this field, on the sports psychology. And as Annie said, we have this project with the equestrian team in Mexico. And, well, very nice to meet you, all of you.
Oh, thank you, Fernando. Yeah, that sounds great. So, yeah, let's see. Why don't we just check in with each person on the call and see if you have what you're struggling with any questions about teams or techniques that you use that are helpful with teams. I don't know, we've got Dave McIntyre and Amy and John. Alex, you guys want to check in? And Monica, anybody, you guys jump in?
Hi, Joanne, it's Amy. I've been working with a private school, and there were about 30 kids between the varsity and the JV tennis team. And one day, you know, I just sat them down and I did the three P's with them and asked them all for examples. And then I went around and I had each one of them stand up and tell me what their two strengths are. What is it about their game that they feel really strong about? And then I asked them one thing that they'd like to improve on and what their goal was for the upcoming match, how they would like to implement, something to focus on, like a performance goal. So we went around, and it was good because everybody kind of learned what each other was thinking as far as what their strengths are and what they need to improve on. So we did that, and I taught them about the three P's, and that worked well.
Great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, those are two really good questions to ask. Just to repeat what you said in case so everyone can hear that you asked them with tennis. Yeah, Amy Howler asked, what are your three strengths or two strengths? You could, whatever number you want to come up with. Yeah, and you could say, for yourself, and then how could those help you contribute to the team? And then one thing that you've, what's one thing you'd like to improve on? That's a good way to put it, Amy, as opposed to saying what's your weaknesses. That people don't like to talk about weaknesses so much, but one thing you'd like to improve on makes it sound forward moving and like a goal. So that's a really good way to put that. Yeah. And sometimes another technique to build on that too would be, you can have other people say, go around the room and, if it's a smaller group and people know each other, pick one person and say, okay, so this person here, what do you think her strengths are? And have everyone else tell them, what they notice about that one person, just only strengths, not the weaknesses part, but what's something that you, a quality in this person that you like, or their strength. It could be, and it could be athletic strengths, or with strengths it could be personality strengths, or mental attitude, all those things. You can broaden it out, so strengths can include many different things. Personal habits like being on time or being a good team player. All those things, that can be a really great way for a team building kind of thing. So everyone goes around and says, "What did you notice about this person that you like, or what are their strengths?" And then you take another person and do the same thing. So
yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so it's like positive feedback from the others, and make sure you just tell them it's only give positive strengths, because you don't want them going around saying what their weaknesses are. That would be too much, way too much for a whole group to do that to one person. You want to do that individually, kind of thing. If you have negative feedback later on, so that's great. Thanks, Amy. Yeah. Others of you, examples of techniques you've used like that, or experience that you have with teams. Dave McIntyre, or John, or Alex.
This is Dave. Sometimes I've been called in. This is more organizational stuff, or teams in terms of a military team. But we'll always give. I guess my thing is just kind of helping people normalize some. If it's something tragic or something like that. Also educating people about the, stress and stress performance curve and all that, and just normalizing some symptoms and give them some educating them about some symptoms or experiences they may be having or may have in the future. So if they're having some kind of symptoms or something like that, it won't freak them out, recognizing that it's a normal reaction to some kind of traumatic event or something. So in that way, trying to set them up for some success with they don't feel like they're having a heart attack or they're, losing their mind or anything.
Yeah, that's fantastic, to kind of know what to tell them, what to expect, and, that everyone goes through these kind of symptoms when they experience a particular thing. You mean like in the military when they're experiencing a death or that sort of thing?
Yeah, working with emergency responders, at some national disasters that I've been involved with, we have to, especially the people who are in the field working at, whether it's the World Trade Center or a school shooting or something like that, making sure that they're kind of taking care of their own health and well-being as they're doing this very difficult job.
Yeah. Were you involved with that, with the World Trade Center?
Yeah, we did. We ran some we have a disaster mental health team that responded. So working with the emergency responders and the firefighters and the police. So, things like that that's kind of so unique, but kind of crazy when people are involved in those kind of scenarios.
Yeah. Could you give an example of that? I don't know if at the World Trade Center, working with the firefighters or the emergency responders, what that was like for you?
It was somewhat traumatic, but our focus was mainly working with the teams that were going out. They had shifts that were going out to the disaster and the debris, and so part of it was, they were a unit, they were a team, and making sure that they had their directions were clear, and when they found some things that, were upsetting to them or something that, that they're weren't expecting to be Superman or anything, that this is an emotional thing beyond comprehension, so that trying to help them maintain their psychological resilience during a very difficult time. So that included giving them opportunities to process the information or the emotional content of things you know, after they came back from their tour, you know, a lot of buddy care, you know, watching out for your buddy, that kind of thing, and a lot of education about just how, you know, how our body or, you know, our mind and our body work together and how they respond to these, you know, disasters. So it was just kind of an ongoing kind of thing, a lot of maintenance, you know, just kind of making sure you're taking care of your foundations, like you're eating and drinking and, you know, things of that nature, you know, kind of so the basic things to, so, you know, you need to be 100% so you can do your job to serve these other people. So how do you maintain your psychological well-being in the midst of, you know, a disaster like this? And knowing when to ask for help.
Right, yeah. That's great. That's fantastic. Dave, thanks for sharing. Yeah, that's a really, I mean, it must have been a real privilege or a special experience to be able to be right there at the World Trade Center when all the whole world was focused on that. And people that were going there, and just to be able to be part of that, to contribute and to make to be to take care of the mental health side of things when there was so much else going on, people, so many people's lives were lost. Yeah, and then of course the families, members of all the who lost family in that World Trade Center need a lot of help after that, right?
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, we kind of talked about it, and I talked about it in terms of a marathon that, you know, right now they're doing the hard work, but it's something that they're recovery, you know, recovery from this, and what we talked, you know, our group focused on was just that this is a long-term thing, and, you know, it's a marathon, so even when you're done with this assignment, there's still going to be things you need to do to take care of yourself, and when your mind revisits this experience, how you're going to, you know, deal with it in a constructive way where it's, you know, something that doesn't dog you and control you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy, I think, for all the team, even if with our sports teams, they don't have as much in the way of, you know, it's not as traumatic as a disaster or death. A lot of times with sports, people view it as a disaster if
yeah.
they're not, their team isn't doing well. And there's a lot of, you know, if they didn't do really, really messed up on a game, then their mind revisits that, and it can be really traumatic for a lot of athletes, too. So, there's a lot of good information. Thanks, Dave, for sharing that. Yeah, how to maintain your psychological resilience, and there's so many parallels between what you're doing with the military, what you have done, and then what athletes need to do, like you say, in the marathon or anything to process that emotional content and be able to, and the buddy care thing, you know, that's like goes along with team members. You know, oftentimes teams are good friends with each other too. They train together all the time, and they need to maintain that friendship and kind of take care of each other during a game and after the game as well. It's really it can be really tough because during that usually during sports any kind of sports event people think that's all. Well, that's all that there is. You know, you want to be totally in the present tense and be presently focused on what's going on right at that moment, and nothing else matters. And so if you're not doing so well, you end up losing, then it can be really devastating for some athletes afterwards. So it's almost like doing the kind of work you're doing, Dave, with the military of being able to help people recover afterward. And I think it's really good to have a debriefing time after a game if you can to help the coaches, the athletic coaches, do that with their team, and or you can do that with the team to talk, you know, just kind of like I did with this professional football team, to process feelings and just to be a facilitator there. And rather than just say, the coach can say, you know, here's what we did right, here's what we need to improve on. But first, it's often, if you can teach the coach to be a facilitator, teach the athletic coach there to kind of talk, you know, ask the athletes, how did you feel about how you did as an individual? How did we do as a team? What could we do better? And kind of get the feelings of the athletes first before the coach goes in with his feedback and direction. Then you get more of a feeling of, you make each a player feel important, I think, and make them feel like they're doing, that they're contributing. And sometimes athletes feel like they were really working hard and they did their absolute best effort, even though the team lost. And to give the athlete a chance to say that, you know, and process those feelings is really important, I think. And it helps keep them motivated for the next game, that even though, you know, your efforts were good, they didn't show, they weren't recognized as much, you know, in this game. If you keep doing those same kinds of efforts and everybody pulls together, then, you know, we are going to get recognized more down the road as a team, that kind of thing. So, yeah, thanks, Dave, for sharing that. And Amy, John, how about John, Alex, Monica, other people on the call, your experience with teams?
Joanne, I have a question. May I ask you a question?
Yes, it's Alex?
No, Fernando.
Fernando, yes.
I have a very specific question. As we told you before yesterday, we are just starting with this question team. And my question is, what can we do to motivate them, to motivate individuals, to leave their individual egos and work all together? That's basic for me.
What can you do to, I didn't quite hear the
motivate
question,
them.
What can you do to motivate individuals?
To leave their egos.
With their egos?
Right. And work all together.
Yeah, so that they're not just, so they're not just thinking of themselves.
Yeah.
They're working together.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question, Fernando. I think that you can... I think with athletes, it's true that everybody has an individual ego and wants to feel important. And I think if there's a way that you could do that exercise I was just mentioning of, going around the room and having each person, you know, pick one person and then have everyone else tell that person what their strengths are. So that's a real team-building kind of exercise. Then go to each person and say what their strengths are. So they kind of get the athlete out of themselves and focused on the strengths of other players. Also, it's good to just work on communication skills, I think. Being able to talk to each other, you know, give athletes, you know, good techniques for communication, to say to each other, you know, a good formula is, you know, if you're upset with someone else, to say, you know, when you do this, it makes me feel like this. So when you do fill in the blank, this behavior, then it makes me feel like and then fill in the blank there. When I'm playing basketball and I'm open here and you're not seeing me, you're not throwing the ball to me, then I get frustrated because I can't contribute to the team or something. So that's a kind of example of teaching people to talk to each other in the right way, to talk about a specific behavior rather than name calling or global statements like "you're a terrible player, you never pay attention to me," you know, that kind of thing. But just to keep it to one specific behavior and one specific feeling or one specific consequence. There's a technique I call soft eyes, which I think is kind of neat. Using soft eyes, which means being able to see everything around you. So, you know, like you say, athletes sometimes all they see is their own ego and what they're doing, and they don't really aren't aware of other people around them. But if you can use what I call soft eyes, you know, it can help you open up to how other people are feeling and what other people's needs are around you. So, you know, example of that, I was up in Park City, Utah. I was trying to get to a client. I had an Olympian up there I was meeting, and I was in traffic. I was running a little bit late, and I couldn't see. We were supposed to meet at the Starbucks, and I was driving really fast, and my eyes were just kind of, you know, I was anxious, and so I couldn't see. Where is this Starbucks? God, where is this place? I got to meet this lady. And I couldn't, I was so nervous and so frustrated and stressed that I couldn't, my eyes were just kind of, you know, I couldn't see all around me. All I could see is just ahead of me and just kind of like a narrow focus. But then I just said, okay, take a deep breath, take some, you know, relax. We're going to get there. Everything will turn out just fine. As I did that, I just breathed, and I just said to myself, okay, soft eyes. So then what I mean by that is my eye, as I breathed and I just relaxed, and my eyes opened up, and all of a sudden, oh, there's the Starbucks right there. I could see around me, I could see things more clearly, and I could calm down and see, you know, where things were. I could just think about it more easily, and I could just see my whole environment. So that was kind of an example of if you can teach your athletes to have, you know, to relax and to breathe and to have soft eyes, meaning, you know, eyes that are open and aware, that awareness of everything around them, then, you know, sometimes that can really help to see, athletes can learn to see the effects that their behavior is having on other people. And sometimes they realize, oh, geez, you know, when I act like an idiot like this, or I'm just talking too much, then I, you know, other people get turned off. I try to see, and you could do an exercise like that to see, you know, when you do a particular behavior, what effect does that have on other people? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of thing can help motivate athletes. I think if they can see what, you know, what it is that they're doing, and then how that affects others, then you know, give them maybe individual feedback about that, or ask them. Oftentimes, if you can get them to talk about that themselves, them be part of the learning process. You know, and so that they come up with the idea and the solution, because I think the solution does lie within each athlete themselves, but you just need to bring that out, then that can help them to motivate them to act, you know, kind of self-correct and act more correctly, act in a way that helps the team. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, yes, of course. Thank you. Because I was thinking that it would be great if we as coaches can show them the a list of the advantages and disadvantages of working alone against working together, things like that. What do you think about it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, is showing advantages of working together, versus working alone. That if you can, you know, kind of have them write those down, that would be a good exercise to do. Say on one side of the page advantages of working together, and then advantages of working alone on another side. And of course, it depends on what sport you're in. But if you're in a team sport where everyone needs to work together, I mean, we see that on TV, gosh, you know, with all kinds of sports, with soccer, and, you know, how teams are passing the ball back and forth and in a really very effective way, and moving the ball down the field and then just getting it right into the goal, you know, works so much better than just one player trying to kick the ball the whole time, and or a team not working together and not getting the ball to the wrong team, you know, and it ends up in the hands of the other team.
Drink water.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But in this case, it's a little bit different because, as you know, they are going to perform as individuals, and the score is going to make them perform as a team.
Yeah, with your question.
Yeah, with the question team.
Yeah, so it's both there, and that's the case with a lot of teams too. Yeah, you've got the individuals performing, and then as their cumulative score helps with the team. And so I think, yeah, a lot of times athletes are only focused on their individual performances.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah, but if they can really see how it's like an added advantage that they're, if they do well, they're contributing to the team as well, then that can be better. And, of course, that one thing that can help is if they can know each other better and like the members of the team. And I know that in your situation, Fernando and Annie, you mentioned that you've got a tough challenge in that the members do not like each other, right?
Right.
So they hate each other.
they are competitors between themselves.
Yeah, and you said they're ex-wives and ex-husbands and
different kind of links.
On the same team. Oh, yeah. And so it can be very complicated that way. So, it's easier if there's new people, say, are coming to a team and they don't know each other, they don't have those past histories, and try to get people to know and like each other and do, sort of fun things together. One exercise to do is have them do something else, not in their sports, but another, have them do some other sport just for fun and where nobody's competing against each other. They're just having fun and just as a team-building kind of exercise, do a different sport or different game where it's just kind of fun, where they can just laugh together. Or something that that they're not used to doing, where everybody's really bad at it. They can laugh at how bad they are at it, and it just makes it. If they can laugh together and have that same experience of having fun together, then it kind of takes them out of their usual way of dealing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So, sounds like the makings for a good reality show, though.
What's that?
I said that sounds like the makings for a good reality TV show.
Oh, I know. Yeah, ex-wives on the same. Yeah, and this is the top team for the Central American Games. Yeah, and I think you said the trainer was an ex-husband of one of the people he's training. So it's a big mess. Too small a world. Yeah. So that's great.
Okay.
Yeah. Other people.
I just wanted to say, you could point to a real recent, yeah, this is John, and a real recent trend in the NBA is to get away from the star system. Example, the last generation of players that came up, it was Kobe Bryant and that group, Allen Iverson, where it was all about, them wanting to be the man, so to speak. And just put some role players around them, and that was the way that the NBA was going. The newer way, and they're calling it teaming up. And you saw that when the Big Three signed contracts and went to the Boston Celtics, and they won an NBA championship. And then directly following that, LeBron James goes to Miami and Chris Bosh goes to Miami and joins up with Dwayne Wade, and they win two NBA championships. So even the superstars of this generation in the NBA are seeing that they're going to go a lot further and do a lot better by teaming up than trying to simply be the man and discouraging other, equal talent playing on the same team.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's tough when you got that, the sort of the star system, and everybody's used to being the one star of their team, and then all of a sudden they get together. Yeah, that's a good example, John, and that's an example too of how, it can be difficult when you got, like high school kids are used to being the star of their team, being a big fish in a small pond, and then they move up to college all of a sudden, and now they're not the star, now they're a small fish, and everybody was used to being the star that's coming there, but now they're all competing against a much higher level of athlete. And, so sometimes, players don't feel, they don't feel like they're the star anymore, and they can get really frustrated. It can be a real blow to them psychologically. So to not be the number one player and have to be just fighting just to be able to stay on the team. So a lot of that might be going on, let's say, in college teams that you might be working with. It's good to be aware of that, of athletes that might be falling off the radar and might be really frustrated or close to quitting because they're frustrated with, like, say, they were always got all the playing time before. I think, Greg, that was one of your questions, too. What about athletes that, you know, aren't getting enough playing time and are frustrated? And, Greg, are you still there, too?
I am, yes.
Oh, good, yeah. That was one of your questions, right?
Yes.
Was it athletes that, how to motivate athletes that are sitting on the bench, or bench warmers, or, that's a good question, Greg, and I think, and athletes that aren't getting as much playing time as they think they should, and I've worked with, I'm currently working with that situation now with a woman, if there's a little bit of background noise, I think somebody's working with their kids there. If you could just press *6 on your phone to mute the phone, that'd be great. Then we can get a good recording here. And then if you want to ask a question, just press *6 again to put yourself back on off mute. Thank you. So I was just saying that, with athletes that are on the bench, I'm working with a volleyball player now who's in that situation, and she gets frustrated because she wants to contribute to the team, but if she's sitting on the bench, she feels gets frustrated and feels like she's not part of the team, and then all of a sudden she gets called in to play, and it doesn't feel warmed up, and then the ball comes to her that she messes up, and then she gets put out again. So I was working with her to be able to, while she's on the bench, to be able to visualize to keep herself in the game, watch what's happening in the game, imagine herself there. You know, if she was the libero, which is the defensive player that gets the digs, is the first kind of first responder when the ball comes over the, really hard down to the deep, to the back end, she's the one that digs it up to the, to the setters, then the setters get it to the hitters, and the hitters hit it over. And so imagine herself that she's out there, getting those digs, even while she's on the bench, and so that she's kind of visualizing the whole time. So when she gets put back in again, she's mentally warmed up as well as physically warmed up and can be right in there in the team again. And then also help that way she can cheer for the team and, be supportive of the team there too. So helping her to sort of be mentally in the game, even if she's on the bench, and to not get frustrated with that, but think of herself as always sort of mentally warming up for the next time that she's put in, so that she can be right there in the game. Because I know it is frustrating to be put out, and then worry about if they make one mistake, then they get taken out again. But it's a kind of a way where athletes have to work themselves up, work their way up to being able to get that more playing time. So I would make her visualizations, MP3s, audios about that, how to be positive while she's even sitting on the bench watching the team, so she can still mentally be in the game and not just check out there. And also I talked about how this is another dynamic with communication, how she was really frustrated. She was this athlete was they were going to be going to play in the nationals. Back in Ohio a year ago, and it was this was in high school and a club team, and she was really this was going to playing in nationals and getting good playing time for her This where all the scouts were going to be, and it was a critical moment for her to be able to get invited to the schools of her choice, you know, to actually get a scholarship and get into the colleges of her choice. So it was, but she was frustrated because she was the best. She felt like she had much better skills and playing time or playing ability, but she wasn't getting the playing time she needed. It was mainly because of politics. She felt that you know, the coach was favoring a different a player to play more time. And so and so this is an example of how you can teach your athletes to communicate with the coach, be more assertive so that they can get the playing time they deserve. So I actually had her tell me what would you like to tell the coach. Let's say just the unedited version, and we just wrote out kind of a little script of what she wanted to say, and then I gave her suggestions and said, okay, now let's edit that so that it's easier for the coach to hear. You know, using what I call the sandwich technique, which is a good communication technique that you can tell your athletes. The sandwich technique is, you know, always start out with something positive first, you know, a compliment or how the team's doing. So, you know, I had her say something like, you know, you want the team to win the championships, or you want our team to do really well. That's something you can both agree on. And then to say the negative part in the middle, or the difficult part, you know, that she wants to be able to have good playing time, and that she's been working really hard, and, you know, she's asking for feedback for the coach. What do I need to do to be able to contribute well to the team and improve my playing so that I can, you know, play well at nationals? And so she'd say that part in the middle and then always finish with a positive statement at the end, because that's what people will remember the most, is usually the first 30 seconds and the last 30 seconds of what you say. So doing that positive sandwich approach of positive, you know, and then negative in the middle, or difficult part in the middle, and then positive at the end, really makes a difference. And so she did that with her coach. We wrote up this script, and she practiced it with me, role-played, and then she practiced it in front of the mirror, I said. And, you know, I said, practice it several times so that you know the words roll off your tongue easily. And then she had that conversation with her coach, and she was able to talk with the coach about how she could play, how she felt she could really contribute to the team, and how her stats are the best, better than the other players. And so she was just, able to communicate well and be more assertive. And then the coach ended up putting her in the team right at the beginning of the game at the Nationals. She ended up playing the game of her life and got invited to, got scholarship offers for five top colleges she wanted to go to. So it was a fantastic example of how you can, you know, work with a player, a bench warmer, so to speak, of someone who's can be an athlete who can be assertive with the coach. And then, but you, if you're working with the team, then you also want to work with the coach to be able to change their style, maybe, or not alter, be able to be flexible in their coaching style to be able to listen to what players are saying. I mean, that's a really key, if you can work with coaches to, you know, to be more open to what the team is saying to them, knowing that that's going to create more team cohesion and more trust. Like you were saying, Greg, creating trust is key so that members all can contribute. And, you know, to create a good team spirit, if they feel like they can talk to the coach, then you know, it's just going to be a much more open flow of communication there. So, what other questions that you have? I know we're running a little bit out of time, and I think this is such a good topic. Why don't we do a part two? Because I know, Greg, we didn't get to all your questions. We can do a part two of teams next time on our next Thursday. Let's see, it would be the November 13th for our call. And we can do a second teams part two, because there's so much on this. And then I'll also talk about sort of part two of getting paid and charging for fees, more about that as well. So are there people that didn't, does that help Greg with, and everyone here with, you know, kind of some of the ideas on teams?
I think it's a good start. It's a very broad and deep topic, so yeah, we could go on for quite a few sessions on that topic.
Yeah, yeah, I know that's a real interest of yours, and that's great. So yeah, we could do that next time. And others, anyone else that didn't get to share? I know Monica, are you still there?
It's just me, Alex. I am. If Greg is still around and if he has some experiences working with players with high egos, I'm just curious if he has experience with that, and if he does, and if you do, Greg, if you mind maybe sharing some of your thoughts or how you work with them, or I'm just curious.
Yeah, that'd be great, Greg. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I gave to Dr. Joanne, because it seems like every team I work with, there's always that one player that is the outstanding athlete but doesn't want to adhere to the team values, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're the biggest challenge, because that, for a coach, of course, he gets ranked or she gets ranked based on results. So if you take the stance that, well, my values or my team values are going to be more important than talent, then you're jeopardizing the results, of course, for the team. So what I found to be most effective is, like I say, once you start the communication process and you're able to isolate the different behavioral styles and communication styles of each of the players, then you have something to push against. And it all boils down to the coach, really. And or maybe if you have a real strong team leader, another player on the team that can confront that individual and point out to them that the values are important to this team, and to the earlier comment that we're going to accomplish more as a group than we are as individuals. And it just gives you a foundation or something to build on. The communication piece, I think, is just so important. And I have had good results in that with that approach, to where we're not isolating the individual as being disgruntled or hard to get along with, or just that people just don't like them. We're not trying to isolate them in that regard. We're just pointing out that everybody communicates a little bit differently, and we understand your communication style, but we still need you to adhere to the team values. So, and it's a challenge, because there again, they feel like it's more important for them to perform as an individual and get their individual results, and then the team results will then follow. So it's a process that you go through. It takes some one-on-one work from an outside source like myself sometimes. That's been very helpful, because that kind of takes it away from the team members and away from the coach, to where they're not being blamed by the individual that, well, they just don't like me. So it becomes a theme, if you will, and if you present it the right way, as they're not broken or they're not different than anybody else or the rest of the team. They just have a different preference as to how they prefer to communicate. So
and
that's the process that I use, and it's been successful, yeah.
Because, Rick, when you made this assessment following the DISC,
yes.
Do you find any particular style that fits into those high ego players?
Very, very, very good question. And I've been tracking it, and it does seem to land in one particular quadrant, and it's that the D, the very high D, the
dominant
quadrant. But it's also the socializer, the influencer in the DISC form, it's influencer.
Yeah.
So because they're very high, fast-paced people, very intense people,
okay. And
they're very focused on results
uh-huh.
and themselves.
I see.
So that in it by itself would tell you that they're going to be very individualistic in performing on a team.
Gotcha.
And by pointing that out and just letting them know that we need these type of people on the team, but what happens is you have a tendency to rub the other two styles wrong, if you will. Your pace is a little too fast and you're too focused on yourself and your own results. And we just educate them on that process, and it seems to take the edge off. Not that you want them to change their behavior totally, because that's what makes them unique and makes them the athlete that they are. But you do need to point out that it is a team event, and we're just trying to get along together. So that, like I say, this process has been very successful for me in taking that edge off, if you will, and creating more of a team spirit.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great, Greg. Thank you. I think that's a good way to put it, taking the edge off, because you can't really change the personality of that person, but what we can do is help them to manage it better and to help them to, because it's going to, if you can help them realize that this kind of style, it can, if it's getting them into trouble with the team there, it's also going to follow them into other situations in life too, with work and with school. And I'd say, with that kind of experience, what I've done is talk to the person individually, and have a session with them and ask the person first to talk about what's going on with them and what they notice and maybe problems that they're having with other members. And usually to talk about how it's a two-way street, that usually any communication is two ways, and that both people need help with making changes. And say, he might say, oh, well, the other team members, they need to do that. They're doing this wrong and this wrong. But if you can say, okay, so that's what you'd like them to change. How about, and then what about yourself? What could changes would you like to make, or could you make too? Just have them see if there's ways that they could, like you say, take the edge off and be a little less, just not changing their personality completely, but kind of turning down the dial on the focus on the ego, or focusing on themselves, kind of dialing. You can dial things up and dial things down, and then if you want to give them feedback on changes that you've noticed or things that you've noticed they're doing, it's good to do it in a way, like you say, that's not critical of them, but just saying, this is, I know your style is different, and here's how it's different, and talk about specific behaviors and then maybe the consequences of those behaviors on the team, or here's what it seems to be doing with the team, and here's how ask for that individual's suggestions, how he could change, and that see it's better if the solutions can come within them himself, within that person. If you can help him to process it through and come up with ideas for how he could change, and if it's his idea, because he's got a high ego anyway, then it's better if you make it his idea to maybe just turn the dial a little bit toward noticing other people and working as a team, and just talking about the advantages of coming in line with the team and the team values, respecting others and all. And, it may be that he doesn't really have friends, friendships, and that he might notice in the conversation that he'd like to develop friendships and, have more support him, have people supporting him. So that could be something you could bring out as an advantage, that, you could, with this, you could develop better friendships have people supporting you. You can support others, and it can all kind of work really well together. Maybe do a visualization with them about that, too, about, having that kind of flow between himself and the other athletes, that they're talking back and forth easily with each other. and communicating, and how then, you know, let's say if he's the star or the really talented athlete, he might be, like, say, for instance, on a football team, he may be the quarterback, and you need those other players to be able to be in the right spot to be able to, when you throw the ball, to everybody's got to work together for your throw to be effective. So if you can communicate well, then you're going to get the results that you want by having that team spirit kind of thing. So if you can help him to come up with those sort of advantages and kind of draw a picture, you know, of what that would look like, say, you know, what would that look like if you were working well with the team? You know, use those three P's in this way. Yeah, those are some ideas. Hopefully, is that kind of helpful for your question, Greg? Well, I guess that's Alex asking you a question. But yeah, why don't we just go, I know it's an hour and a half here. We need to go, but why don't we just say go around, those of you who are left, what was helpful, most helpful for you about this session, or one nugget that you could take away that we could share with the group here?
What I like is to bring team cohesion. Sometimes I think you give a nice example of doing something together. It has nothing to do with the sport that they participate in.
Can you speak a little bit louder? Doing something together, what?
They can do something together that they can have some fun with. So like becoming more, like having fun. I don't know, whatever game they can play together. So they can bring some fun and more, a better relationship between each member of the team. So rather than creating more like a team competition and competing against one another, if they can have some fun game, they can just entertain themselves, that may just loosen up a little bit the tension and create better communication and fun, and that may actually revert into having better team communication.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
That is a good idea.
Yeah, let them laugh together and have a different experience with this other fun game. I think that's, yeah, fantastic. Good team-building experience. Yeah, great. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah.
And, other people that are on the call, what was the most helpful thing for you or anything that you'd like to close up with?
Well, for me, for Fernando, for me, it's, well, basically the same that Alex is saying, that it is important for for us as coaches to move them from the usual frame they are used to work. So to change the scenario for them.
Yeah, different, put them in a different situation.
Right.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. And then they're able to play and have fun and experience different kinds of support each other because they're not being competitive. Yeah, thanks, Fernando. Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Greg, are you still on the call?
This is Dave.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
When you're talking about the surgeon and the football team, I think it's worth looking at as sports psychology or performance psychology, not just in sports. You think about, like, the example you brought up about the surgeon looking to improve his performance. I think that's an interesting idea. I really hadn't looked at it as far as other high performing specialties and how you might want to tap into those on the business model.
Yeah, that's great. Because especially people like orthopedic surgeons are working in sports medicine, so they're interested in the whole area of sports anyway. And so, that surgeon called me, had just looked me up on the internet in this area and just said, yeah, I want to do peak performance in the operating room. is what his main complaint or main goal was. So, you can work with surgeons to, and he said it can be a real mess in the surgery room when there's and they're a team as well. You know, there's a team of nurses and, you know, the assistants. And he said sometimes they have no idea, you know, all these new people are coming in. They don't know what they're doing. They're not working as a team. And that's as a if you're on the operating table as a patient, you do not want that.
Right.
you want a good team there. So and there's a lot of emotions that go on in the surgery room. So we worked with that, being able to handle all that. So thanks, Dave. Yeah, that's a whole other area that you can work in. Types of teams and surgeons are high performing. It's a very exciting area. So Amy, are you still there? I don't know if she may have left. I know it's kind of late here. Anyone else? Greg, was that helpful for you?
Yeah, it was. To Alex's question or point, I have a collegiate soccer team that during the preseason, once a month they get together and have a bowling night. It kind of supports the theory that you do something outside of your own sport together that not everybody is particularly good at, but it becomes fun. And if you can add that sense of humor, the fun piece to that team element, it strengthens the team spirit for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you only do that once, but I think it's good to do a lot of that. Maybe do it on a regular basis, have them do something outside their own sport so that they get that continual laughter and fun feeling.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, everyone. Anyone else want to contribute something they thought was helpful here or any tips?
Oh, just me, Alex, again. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at their website and see that if you look into team building games or something like that nature, you can find a lot of exercises that contribute to either trust or collaboration or different things. So that may be another source that we can tap into.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about this more next time, too, on November 15th. And everyone have a nice Halloween. And you can all go as the sports psychologist coaches. trick or treat. But thank you so much for a good call, everyone. It's always an honor to work with you and share all of our thoughts and feelings here about this exciting field. And there's just so much we can do, so much we can contribute in this field of mental training and performing edge coaching and sports psychology. So we'll talk soon. If you have other questions, I'm always feel free to email me. And we'll recording will be up shortly on the website. So I'll try to get that up in the next day or two here. And all the other recordings are up there, too. You just click on the yellow schedule button on the right to get the recording, and you can download
Great.
It. So thank you so much. All right,
thank
have a good
much.
Day, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.